I'm David Brancaccio. At a time when protesters are calling for equal justice for black people and the coronavirus is killing disproportionate numbers of people who are black and brown, we lead with the topic of economic disparities by race. We continue to ask people for thoughts about reimagining the economy, not just rebuilding back to what we had before. Let's talk to Andre M. Perry. He's a fellow at the Metropolitan Policy Program at the Brookings Institution and author of the book, Know Your Price, Valuing Black Lives and Property in America's Black Cities. Dr. Perry, thank you for linking up here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So even before anyone knew this term, COVID-19, and despite what the White House had emphasized was the best job market for black people on record, there were enormous disparities.
Oh, man. And the best job market in U.S. history for blacks meant that blacks, the unemployment rates were twice that of the white rate. Home ownership has plummeted to levels that were recorded before the Fair Housing Act was implemented in the 60s. Going back to normal would be disastrous for black Americans. And we're certainly not in a position to wave any victory flags. And after COVID, which certainly exposed the structural racism undergirding these economic outcomes, certainly shows that racism is a big problem, a drag in the market that limits the economic mobility of black people.
And with COVID, you see it play out. I mean, the government says as one of its ways to stimulate the economy in the face of the virus, go down to your local bank and get a loan that will be funded by the SBA. But these old patterns of discrimination in lending rear their ugly head.
Yeah, when they announced that the Treasury would be distributing funds to banks, my first reaction was like, no, don't they realize the negative relationship mainstream banks have with black folk? And we should not be surprised that 95% of black business owners did not receive the payroll protection loan that was in the CARES Act. So we don't necessarily need to see white-only signs in a policy to know they existed. And that's just a reflection that there's built-in inequality in the systems that we use to distribute resources to build wealth. And so and if we're going to stay within the confines of inequality, we're never going to see systemic change.
I mean, back to the period after Reconstruction and the notorious presidency of Andrew Johnson, what are some of the things that happened then that reverberate even today?
You remember that a lot of the social distancing that we talk about today actually have occurred for years, that many black communities were, quote unquote, quarantined to prevent the spread of disease and the falling of property values of white communities. And so we have a long history of segregating black communities and then deeming them too risky. And that obviously was the thrust of the redlining, to deem black communities or communities with majority black populations too risky to receive refinancing loans or home loans, that limited our ability to accrue wealth over time. The children of folks who lived in redlining did not own property thereafter. And we see the impact of this today. Wealthy people, and when I say wealthy people with assets, have better life outcomes, have better educational outcomes, have better criminal justice outcomes. And so that racism that was leveled against black communities then are still playing themselves out today. And if we're going to correct the police violence, we're going to have to correct the systemic violence inflicted upon black Americans every day.
And some of that is how money flows. I spoke with Mark Morial of the National Urban League the other day, and he talked about the money we have spent on policing in America, including flawed policing. And he was thinking about other ways we could have spent the money to make people safer and improve how people live. There's an opportunity cost to spending the money on things that are not working.
Well, I mean, every day we spend money on injuries in prisons, for instance, is money that should be used in overall health care. The money we invest in prison systems should be spent on education. And as states go into austerity mode, because of the recession, we're going to really see, that money missing from schools and other public services. And so if we really want to enact change in society, we're going to really have to deconstruct this criminal justice system because it's crowding out the funds that should be used to build wealth in other areas.
So in reimagining the economy, given the winter and spring we're living through, maybe there's an opportunity for that. Maybe the window of policy possibilities is now wider. What would be toward the top of your agenda to really change the lives of people and narrow these disparities by race?
Wow, there's so many things from reparations to business ownership and business financing. I'll go with one. If we can increase the number of Black businesses that have more than one employee by 15%, we can expand the economy by $55 billion.
There's this phrase, particularly among tech companies, trying to think about narrowing some of these racial disparities that we've been hearing even this week. Hire or wire, hire Black and brown people or invest in their ventures. I mean, that's kind of what you're talking about.
Oh, absolutely. The businesses have a responsibility to invest in communities. Right now, when big tech companies land in cities, it doesn't necessarily lead to growth in among the workers in that neighborhood. I'm from Pittsburgh, where Google landed its headquarters there. The Black communities around that neighborhood are struggling. There has to be a deliberate effort to invest in Black lives whenever a company comes to town. In fact, this is a time when mayors should demand, using tax incentives, that businesses hire Black people displaced by our social distancing measures. We're not going to get out of this just from public regulation. At some point, corporate leaders need to take responsibility for the policy violence they cause. Remember, many of these companies could change the economic trajectories of communities with a snap of a finger by hiring them and by providing a living wage and providing the benefits. That's ultimately going to lead or give vulnerable communities the protection. But it's the structural inequalities that removed the benefits, that lowered the pay, that made it less likely that Black people have homes. Those are the things that make Black communities more vulnerable. And corporate America has a role in deconstructing those policies and practices so that we can uplift the economic mobility of Black communities.
Andre M. Perry is a fellow at the Metropolitan Policy Program at Brookings and author of Know Your Price, Valuing Black Lives and Property in America's Black Cities. Dr. Perry, thank you.
Thank you for having me.